I did want to just make one announcement about item number six, and that is we will take this up after public forum, after lunch, and staff is going to, I guess, describe a few things, and we'll have a chance to decide what we want to do at that point, whether to vote or to continue it. So we'll hear from staff later. All right, moving back into our list, so we're now at 11, I believe, right, Mr. Harris?
Correct.
Would you like to introduce this item?
Certainly. Item 11 is a total maximum daily load for nitrogen compounds and orthophosphate in the lower Santa Maria watershed and tributaries to Oso Flaco Lake. The goal for establishing these TMDLs is to rectify water quality impairments due to nutrients and unionized ammonia, thereby providing for the attainment and support of the designated beneficial uses of municipal and domestic water supply, freshwater habitat, agricultural water supply, and groundwater recharge. Adoption of this TMDL will result in a basin plan amendment. Chris Rose will be presenting this item. Chris?
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Good morning, Chair Young and members of the board. I'm Chris Rose, the TMDL program manager here in the Central Coastal Region, and to my left is Larry Harlan, the environmental scientist who developed this particular TMDL. First of all, I'd like to ask, would you like to have a presentation, a short presentation about this item, or do you feel that you've been sufficiently briefed already on this item?
So I would say if the board would like, the staff can make a presentation, or you can go to the comment cards if you so choose and take the comments first.
What would staff like? Do you want a brief introduction of this? I mean, we have been pre-briefed, so the question is...
Well, we've been pre-briefed, and it appears to be remarkably aligned with what we did in the Salinas River.
Yeah.
So I would be fine. I mean, if other folks want a presentation, that's fine, but I would be fine with moving forward.
Dr. Hunter?
I wondered how many slides you had for the sake of folks that are here.
Dr. Hunter, I think I have about 12 slides, and I think I could get through them in under 10 minutes, if you'd like.
And Russ?
Well, yeah, sure, we've been briefed, but I think there's folks in the audience that might be interested, but I would give an abbreviated brief.
Okay, so why don't we do that, because I do have three speaker cards, so why don't you...
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. All right, you're going to have four. So go ahead. Why don't you go through your slides?
Very good. Then I will go through them rather quickly, unless you'd like me to slow down a little bit. And I think we're going to have plenty of time to discuss this item later. So again, as Mr. Harris said, this is the TMDL for the Lower Santa Maria River watershed, which includes nitrate and orthophosphorus compounds. Our recommendation is that the board adopt resolution. This resolution that would essentially have this TMDL be placed in the basin plan. So this is being approved as a basin plan amendment, which is different than some of our other TMDLs, which are approved by resolution only. The TMDL highlights. This TMDL is consistent with our regional priorities, which include protection of aquatic life, which also include protection from toxicity. As one of the board members also mentioned, the approaches in this TMDL are very similar. The technical approaches and our conclusions and our implementation is very similar to the nutrient TMDL for the Salinas River watershed that the board approved in March. We are using existing regulation. We are not proposing any new regulation in order to implement this TMDL, particularly implementation of the Ag Order and NPDES permits. We have given, like the Salinas project, implementing parties many years to achieve this TMDL. The final TMDLs we think will be approved in about 30 years. I'm sorry, met in about 30 years. And, of course, the TMDL meets federal requirements under the Clean Water Act. This is a map of the project area, which is shown in green here. And then this is the larger part of the watershed where we have the Sisquoc and the Cuyama flowing down this way from east to west. And what this is a bubble map of nitrate as nitrogen concentrations. And on the next map, I'm going to show you a blow-up of this particular map. So, again, here is the project area with a bubble map showing nitrate concentrations, so as nitrate as nitrogen. And you probably recall that the MCL, or the drinking water standard for nitrate, is 10 milligrams per liter. So essentially, the bigger the bubble, the higher the concentration. And these are median concentrations, not maximum, but median. And the pink denotes the urban environment, and then agriculture is in green. So as you can see, we have larger bubbles and therefore larger concentrations or higher concentrations along the ag channels in the watershed. And consequently, here are the impaired water bodies. The impaired water bodies are shown in red, and I'm not going to name them all, but there are about 12 water bodies that are currently listed as impaired on the 303D list for a variety of pollutants, including nitrate, dissolved oxygen, and unionized ammonia. And consequently, from those impairments, we have beneficial use impacts, which include municipal and domestic supply. In other words, the MUM beneficial use is not being protected right now because we have concentrations that are well in exceedance of the 10 milligrams per liter nitrate as nitrogen. In addition to that, we have aquatic life beneficial uses that are not being protected, primarily cold, warm, wild, and rare beneficial uses. And agricultural supply beneficial use is also not being protected because of the nitrate concentrations that we see in part of the lower part of the watershed. And finally, the groundwater recharge beneficial use is not being protected. Source analysis for nitrogen. By and large, we have two main sources of nitrogen in the system that are contributing to the exceedances in the surface waters, and that is cropland and groundwater. And when we say groundwater, we're primarily referring to the shallow groundwater in this watershed. We also have some other peripheral sources, but again, by and large, the main sources in the system for nitrogen is groundwater and cropland. And phosphorus is similar insofar as we have cropland that is a major source for phosphorus and groundwater. Again, we also have the urban fraction grazing lands, septics, and of course natural lands that are also contributing phosphorus to the system. The nutrient TMDLs. So the TMDLs that we are proposing today are based in part on existing basin plan standards. Well, that first standard is the 10 milligrams per liter, which is protecting the drinking water standard. And then we also have a TMDL that is, again, based on an existing standard for unionized ammonia of 0.0225 nitrogen, expressed as nitrogen. And then these two TMDLs down here for nitrate and orthophosphate are for the protection of aquatic life beneficial uses. And we essentially have two forms here. What we have is we have nitrogen going down as far as 4.3 milligrams per liter. I'm sorry, nitrate as nitrogen at 4.3 milligrams per liter. And that is what we feel is protective during the dry season. And then all the way up to 8 milligrams per liter, which we think will be protective during the wet season. And correspondingly, for orthophosphate, in the dry season, we need to get down to 0.08 orthophosphate. And in the wet season, 0.3. And then we also have nutrient response indicator targets. So these are targets that we are trying to achieve as a result of those nutrient TMDLs. So this is basically the stimulus is the nitrogen and the phosphorus, and then the response in the environment is things like dissolved oxygen. So again, the things that you see in yellow are our existing basin plan standards. So we have 5 milligrams per liter, 7 milligrams per liter for warm and cold, respectively. And then we want to see dissolved oxygen saturation not being depressed below 85%. And then we have oxygen supersaturation target. When we see oxygen saturation rising above 13 milligrams per liter, that's an indication that we have supersaturation conditions occurring in the system. Chlorophyll A, we like to see it under 15 micrograms per liter, and their microcystins less than 0.8 micrograms per liter. The proposed TMDL implementation plan? Yes.
Before you go on, can you go back to that last slide? I want to make a point that California EHA health guidelines that's statewide guidelines, and the state board asked for that specifically because of the problem with microcystin toxins around the state. Especially, it really became an issue when we had the Iron Gate Reservoir up in the North Coast region. Extensive problems with it, and that's one of the key things about removing those dams is
the problem with the algal blooms.
Right, exactly. Thank you. Excuse me. The proposed implementation plan for irrigated agriculture, as I mentioned earlier, we are relying on the agricultural order, and we are not proposing any modifications to the agricultural order in order to implement this TMDL. And as far as stormwater entities, we have existing NPDES permits, phase two permits in this particular watershed. And what we asked, what we ask implementing parties to do for stormwater entities in these in our TMDLs is to develop a waste load allocation attainment plan. It's essentially a plan that they deliver to us, telling us how they're going to go about meeting their waste load allocation. And I think it's important that we note that the agricultural discharges that are originating upstream in this watershed, upstream of the permitted area in this watershed, do not need to be part of that waste load allocation attainment plan. The city is not responsible for regulating those discharges that are originating upstream from them. I want to make that very clear. And then finally, we have some goals that we think are attainable. In the first 12 years, we'd like to see existing standards met. In other words, we would like to see the nitrate drinking water standard met. We would like to see the unionized ammonia standard met. We think that's doable in the first 12 years. And then in the first 20 years, we would like to see the wet season higher numeric targets achieved. We think that's doable in 20 years. And then finally, in 30 years, we think that implementing parties can achieve more restrictive dry weather targets. And again, this is the same thing that we proposed and the board agreed upon for the Salinas nutrient TMDL. Finally, evaluating progress, we would like to offer broad flexibility, like we did in the Salinas TMDL, for implementing parties to show us that they are making progress towards achieving these TMDLs. For example, receiving water nutrient concentrations can be used, and if they would like to use a nutrient mass load analysis, that would be fine too. Implementation of management practices, tell us about the management practices that you are implementing in order to achieve these TMDLs. Improvements in biological indicators, also very important. Remember that the nutrient concentrations that we are proposing as targets and as TMDLs are not objectives or goals in and of themselves. What we're trying to achieve is we're trying to achieve protection for the aquatic environment, which includes things like dissolved oxygen, microcystins, chlorophyll A, and so on. So if we can achieve the desired dissolved oxygen that is protective of aquatic life, even if the nutrient concentrations are higher than what we are proposing, that will be perfectly fine, as long as they meet the existing standards for drinking water standards and for unionized ammonia. As long as we're below those concentrations, the key is can we protect aquatic life through dissolved oxygen? And once they do that, then we're good to go. The TMDL development, we've been at this for a while. We first started this project in August 2006 when we had our first public stakeholder meeting. We had several CEQA scoping meetings, including, well, I won't read them for you, but what happened is we had a new integrated list where a new 303D list where new impairments were found. And so consequently, we brought those into the project, so we felt that it was necessary for us to have more CEQA scoping meetings. We postponed the project in February 2009 because stakeholders thought that because of the agricultural order and its evolution at that time, it would be best to just pause the project. So we paused that project in 2009. Now here we are in 2013. Again, we had some more stakeholder meetings. And in one of those stakeholder meetings, the stakeholders requested a 60-day public comment period. And you probably recall that we're required to have a 45-day public comment period. They asked for 60. We gave them 60. We received comments from Laguna County Sanitation District, and well, you can read them for yourself. And I'm going to summarize essentially what these comments were for you in a moment. They would like to see a mass-based TMDL, preferred over concentration-based TMDL. This is the same comment that we received for the Salinas project as well. Concentration TMDLs will result in more irrigation water use. That's what somebody said in one of their comments, and I think that the essential underlying assumption here is that the growers will have to dilute their water in order to meet the targets, and consequently then they would have more irrigation water and more water usage. Concentration TMDLs will result in well development into the lower aquifer. Again, although they didn't spell out what the underlying assumptions are, I think the underlying assumption here is that the growers will be afraid of these proposed targets, which, of course, are non-regulatory. We cannot regulate and enforce against these targets because they're targets in a TMDL. But that growers would be afraid of them, and that subsequently then they would drill deeper into the aquifer into less nitrate-laden groundwater so that they could meet those targets. Vegetative treatment systems are problematic for food safety. The reason that this comes up is because we propose in our CEQA analysis that some growers might want to use vegetative treatment systems. And growers cannot achieve numeric targets with known practices. That is another comment we received. And the CEQA analysis is inadequate is another comment that we received. And beneficial uses are not appropriate for these engineered flood control channels. This is a comment by the City of Santa Maria. And USEPA gave us a comment that they said that it meets requirements for approval, and they support approval at this time. Proactive efforts, I think it's worth noting that we do have some grantees in this watershed that have taken us up on our offer for different grant opportunities in order to help implement not only agricultural order, but also these TMDLs. We know that irrigation nutrient management practices are being implemented in this watershed. We've talked to some growers at the stakeholder meetings where we know that they've gone to drip, and we applaud them for that. Treatment, there are in the works as we speak some implementing parties that are developing treatment systems that will lower even more the nitrate and orthophosphorus concentrations from these systems. One idea is the idea of a bioreactor, and I think we might hear a little bit more about that later. And then vegetative treatment systems. Somebody mentioned vegetative treatment systems in our stakeholder meetings. And I think it's worth noting that vegetative treatment systems are a quasi-engineered system where the engineer dials in how fast that water moves through the residence time, what plants are used, so that it maximizes the nutrient uptake. It's just not a matter of letting these flood control channels or these irrigation channels grow into weeds and willows. It's much more than that. It's a well thought out process that really reduces the nitrogen input into the system. And then finally, I really feel that during our stakeholder process, we've had very open dialogue and sometimes heated, but I think that can be healthy. And we are available for questions.
Okay. If the board doesn't have any questions, or does it? Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Johnston.
I was trying to understand, and this is something I didn't catch in the pre-briefing, although you maybe said it. You referenced the targets for nitrogen that are below the drinking water standard, which are protective of aquatic life. And then you said that really the dissolved oxygen is the key. And if we can get the appropriate dissolved oxygen levels, even though as long as we're below that drinking water standard of 10, that's what's key. And even if we don't attain the lower levels of nitrates, but we're able to attain the dissolved oxygen levels, that meets our need. Am I paraphrasing you accurately?
Yes, you are. Yes, you're paraphrasing me accurately. You said it pretty much how I would say it, that as long as we're below the drinking water standard and as long as we're meeting the standard for unionized ammonia, that what our objective here in those nutrient targets is to achieve the dissolved oxygen and microcystin targets that we need in order to protect aquatic life.
So then why are those other targets in there?
Because those are the indicator targets that we feel we need a target for the implementing parties that we need in order for them to get down to those dissolved oxygen levels. Remember that dissolved oxygen is not something that you load. It's simply an environmental response.
So is there some statement in the draft TMDL that actually says what we just went back and forth with?
There
that
is.
If we meet, okay, there is.
There is. It, and it's in the Basin Plan Amendment language.
Okay, so let's go to our. I have four speaker cards, and I'm going to accept no more cards at this point. Let's go through these four, and then we can follow up with more questions if we have them for staff. Okay, Sean Haggerty, I believe, Shannon Sweeney, Claire Weinman, and Steve Shimmick. Yes. And you have 18 minutes, right, Mr. Haggerty?
Collectively between myself and Shannon. So,
and Shannon, okay. Well, I'll dial in 18 minutes. What would you like me to do? Do you want me to give you a warning?
I will try to finish my part early, so hopefully I'll get through it and I practice it, so we'll
okay,
see how it
well,
goes.
I'll start right now. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board, board staff. My name is Sean Haggerty. I'm a partner with the law firm of Best, Best & Krieger, and I'm here today speaking on behalf of the City of Santa Maria. Shannon Sweeney will also be part of this joint presentation on behalf of the city here, but not speaking for the city are Steve Kahn and Alan Pritchett as well. I'd like to thank you for granting us the additional time to make our presentation. This is an important issue for the city, and we appreciate having the time that we think we need to present the issue to the board. We also want to thank staff. As always, staff has been available and very receptive to our concerns, and clearly they've attempted to address our concerns in their responses to comments and in some of the changes to the document. We value the relationship that we have with staff and with the board, and we share a common goal and a common interest. And the question, as always, is how you get there and implementation questions. And so with that, we have four concerns that we want to raise. I'll be walking through those, and then Shannon will give a specific example of a project that the city has in the works that we're concerned about with regard to the TMDL. And our request to you today is not to adopt the TMDL as presented today and to direct staff to address our comments and revise the TMDL accordingly. We think that this would make the TMDL better and ultimately result in better water quality outcomes. So our four areas of concern, the first one is has already been mentioned. It's this approach focusing on concentration. The TMDL targets are expressed and the waste load allocations are expressed in only in terms of concentration. The city has requested and others have requested that they be expressed based on load, either independently or we think you could do it in the alternative, have a load-based expression. We think a load-based approach in general allows for a more holistic watershed-based approach, allows for more innovative projects, some of which Shannon will talk about. You heard earlier about pump and fertilize approaches. We think that that method would actually be fostered by a load-based approach rather than a concentration-based approach. So we think there's a lot of reasons why approaching the TMDL based upon load rather than concentrations would result in better water quality outcomes. Staff has acknowledged in its responses to comments, and specifically response to comment 13, that there are some limitations with regard to the concentration-based approach. And staff says that the staff acknowledges that reductions in concentration-based allocations alone may not be the best indicator to gauge on-the-ground implementation efforts and capture progress in attaining the TMDL. And in response to the city's comments and to other comments, the city has added some flexibility in the TMDL. They've included an attached load-based calculation or an expression of the TMDL as an attachment to the TMDL, and that's all appreciated, and we welcome that. We think the staff should go a step further and actually in the Basin Plan Amendment express all of the allocations both in terms of, well, in terms of load, or at a minimum in terms of load and concentration as well. And with the MS4 system that we operate, this is a particular concern. As you heard staff talk about how with regard to the ag order, this is not, the TMDL itself is not self-executing. That's true with regard to the MS4 too, but there's a vehicle by which the waste load allocations will be incorporated into the permit, the MS4 permit, as specific requirements. And if you look at response to comment 62, which is a comment from EPA, It raises concerns about the flexibility that staff has put into the TMDL, because really what's going to happen is that this is going to be expressed in the permit as a water quality-based effluent limitation ultimately in terms of concentration only. And so at least as for the city, the type of flexibility that has been built into the TMDL itself essentially will be, at least in our view, rendered somewhat moot, because our permit requirement is going to be expressed in terms of concentration, and that's a problem for us. We think that that really is not the right approach. It really will inhibit the city's ability to implement water quality projects that will result in better water quality results, and essentially box the city in to the concentration-based specific numeric limitations. Staff acknowledged that we're not responsible for regulating upstream ag discharges. However, those discharges ultimately do flow through our city and into the channels that I'll talk about in a second. And because of the way the stormwater permits are written and the receiving water limitations language, there's an additional concern that any contribution from the city could result in potential liability under the stormwater permit, because we would be discharging into an area that already has high levels that possibly exceed water quality standards. So for all those reasons, we think a load-based approach is a better way. Now, staff's in part explanation is that the basin plan requirements and the standards are expressed in terms of concentration, but our view of the world is the TMDL really is the best time to think very broadly about these issues, to come up with solutions that then can be implemented through the permits in a creative way that really can lead to better water quality results. And so we really would encourage you to direct staff to go back, work with the city, think about a way that we can express the requirements of the TMDL in ways that will allow the city to really do the innovative things that the city wants to do, and not just mechanically take the concentration limits from the basin plan and apply it directly to the city. The second issue is was mentioned in the summary of the comments. That's the treatment of the three channels that run through the city, the Bradley, the Blosser, and Main Street. And I know that the board and staff has heard this from the city previously, and we will continue to raise these issues because it's a very important issue for the city. These three channels are flood control facilities. They were constructed in or about the 1960s. They were constructed in areas where, unlike other flood control facilities that used existing water courses and then improved them, these were not pre-existing water courses. These were facilities that were constructed for flood control purposes. They're mostly concrete facilities. They're fenced off for the most part. They're not intended for public use. They're not public use is not allowed in them. And so we think a different approach should be taken than what's done in the TMDL. The TMDL treats these channels as undesignated surface water bodies and subjects them to the municipal water supply and the fishable swimmable standards that apply to such undesignated surface water bodies. But our view of the world is that these are not surface water bodies. As I mentioned, they were not pre-existing water courses. They're flood control facilities. They really shouldn't be treated as traditional surface bodies of water. They should be treated differently. And however you express that, if you look at them in terms of just what they are under your basin plan, or if you look at it as we've previously tried to explain, that maybe they shouldn't be have these beneficial use designations of Rec 1 or some of the aquatic designations. However you look at it, they really are different animals, and we really think a different approach of how to treat them would lead to better results. And at a minimum, at least in our view, it sort of underscores the need for a load-based approach, because that allows maybe more flexibility in using the channels to convey water to certain areas that then could be treated. Our third concern and our fourth concern are both more technical in nature. Those are the two main substantive ones. The first technical one is Health and Safety Code Section 57004. This is a requirement of peer review. The start of the introduction of the item indicated how close this was to the Salinas TMDL, but our position is that peer review is required, and I want to try to explain why. The Health and Safety Code specifically says that the board cannot adopt the TMDL until it, and I'm going to read this because it's important, it submits the scientific portion of the proposed rule along with a statement of the scientific findings, conclusions, and assumptions on which the scientific portion of the proposed rule are based, and the supporting scientific data, studies, and other appropriate materials to peer review. Now, this TMDL hasn't been subject to peer review. The analysis of staff set forth in the responses to comments and in a memo from council is that the scientific elements of the TMDL have been subject to peer review under the Salinas TMDL. There's two reasons why we disagree with this approach. One, just from a statutory point of view, it fundamentally ignores the second part of the statutory requirement because it speaks in terms of both the scientific portions of the proposed rule, but then also the more specific data analysis that supports this particular application of those scientific rules. That has not been done here. So there's different data that was used for this TMDL than for the Salinas TMDL. That data has not undergone peer review. And then while basin plan requirements and the concentration levels might be similar, the land uses are very different. Some of the flow and critical conditions are different. And so as a factual matter, there's a difference between the Salinas area and the area covered by this TMDL. And even if you just look at the peer review itself, the first comment from the first peer reviewer on the Salinas TMDL speaks in terms of the spatial variability that exists in ecoregions and watersheds. So there's a difference between these two areas, and we think that this TMDL should go through peer review. And then our final comment has to do with CEQA. And what I'd like to do for the board is put it in a little bit of a context because we, as cities, counties, we do general plans, and they're similar to the level of analysis and impact that a basin plan has and a basin plan amendment have. These are obviously high-level documents. They're planning documents. But they drive fundamentally all of the subsequent decisions that are made by staff and by people who are implementing the requirements of the general plan in the case of municipalities or the basin plan in the case of the water boards. And the cities have to do a rigorous CEQA analysis of their general plan amendments. And we are essentially asking the board to do the same. And we don't think that the board has performed a CEQA analysis that's sufficient. We've pointed this out in comments. There were responses to comments in a letter, May 29th letter that I provided yesterday. We indicated why we think the responses to comments were deficient. But to just summarize some of the CEQA issues, there's no baseline in the CEQA document. We think the project description is lacking. There's a defective cumulative analysis. There's fundamentally no mitigation that's required in the CEQA document, so the significance analysis in terms of what's a significant impact or what could be mitigated is flawed. We think that the analysis has been deferred to the project level. There are no sufficient alternative analysis, no mitigation monitoring plan or statement of overriding considerations. And then a broader concern has to do with the fact that we had the bacteria TMDL. We now have the nutrient TMDL, and then coming in the future is the toxicity pesticide TMDL. And there's an issue in terms of segmenting the CEQA analysis for the same watershed for those different TMDLs. So we think that's a concern as well. So that concludes the concerns that we have. What I would like to do now is to have Shannon come up and speak specifically about a project. And again, our request for you today is to not adopt the TMDL. Let us work a little more with staff. We think that revisions can be made to make the TMDL better and produce a better result.
Watch your whole mouth until they're finished. Yeah. You have a little less than 4.5 minutes left.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Unless, Russ, it's clarification. If you have clarification, otherwise we should hold it off until they've completed.
Good morning, Chairman Young, members of the board, and staff. My name is Shannon Sweeney. I'm the Water Resources Manager for the City of Santa Maria, and I'd like to reiterate Sean's statement that it is a pleasure to work with the board staff, and I think that we all share the same goals. I know firsthand the magnitude of the nitrate issue within the Santa Maria Valley because I'm responsible for serving a safe drinking water supply to over 100,000 people in a disadvantaged community from this groundwater basin. I'm here to request that the Bradley, Blosser, and Main Street channels be delisted from the 303D list because as long as these channels are listed, they cannot be used as conveyance systems for potential treatment to address this nitrate issue. The agricultural community has made great strides in reducing nutrient loading, but even the responsible actions of today are not going to solve decades of past practice. The legacy nitrate that exists in the groundwater aquifer today, where in many places it's way above the nitrate drinking water standard, it needs to be drawn out of the ground and put to its best use, which is irrigation for crops, or treated to revert it back to its safe, inert, gaseous form so that we can actually achieve our desired goals for everybody in this room. For myself, a clean drinking water supply. For the environmental community, underflows to creeks that won't cause algal blooms. And for the agricultural community, irrigation water that won't burn sensitive crops. But we need a regulatory environment that supports these sorts of real solutions. The city believes that such solutions do exist that can create a sustainable groundwater basin for municipal water supply. And so what we did was we funded a feasibility study for agricultural tailwater denitrification. The study considered an area encompassing over 5,000 acres of active agricultural land. These 5,000 acres all have one thing in common. They all drain to the Bradley Channel. By treating this common agricultural runoff with a passive wood chip denitrification system at the end of the channel, flows in nutrient levels can be attenuated, allowing for a successful biological system, one that can achieve far greater success than an on-farm solution. In conjunction with the Kachuma Resource Conservation District, and with the support of other Santa Maria Valley stakeholders, including staff of this regional board, this project has been submitted to the state for consideration of Proposition 84 funding. But the Bradley Channel can but not be used as this conveyance towards a treatment process if it continues to be listed as an impacted water body. Please help us in the community to start creating real solutions for this extremely challenging issue by delisting these three flow control channels and therefore removing this regulatory hurdle. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this presentation, Russ and then Mr. Johnston.
Well, I think she answered part of my question, but you talked about you had agriculture flows in one of the channels. What about the other two channels that are referred to? You have mentioned three. That there were mainly stormwater collection channels that were man-made through the city, but it's obvious that one of them is a conveyance of some other tributary. Now, do the other two channels have tributaries flowing into those particular channels?
Yes, all three of those flood control channels do carry a significant amount of agricultural runoff.
So there is no dry period of the year?
No, these three run
year-round.
Year-round.
And they all end up where?
They all end up ultimately in the Santa Maria River.
And is there any treatment to any of those water bodies?
At this time, no.
No. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnston.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. First of all, you were asking for delisting of three channels, but you were referencing a proposed project in one channel, in the Bradley Channel. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Why the other two?
Because we see this project as a model for future such projects. This is a big step for the Santa Maria Valley community, one in which I and others have spent a lot of time gaining support for systems along this line in order to start getting real solutions for the Santa Maria Valley as a whole. I believe that with one successful project on one channel, it will help gain support so that we can see similar such processes on the other two channels.
And so I'm guessing that the principal contributions of nitrates and organophosphates to the water flowing in these channels is exterior to the city, is the agricultural tear water that's coming in. Do you have a sense of what the city's contribution is to those through the what would be draining in from the streets?
If I recall my numbers correctly, the 5,000 acres of agricultural land drain into the Bradley Channel. There is also a contribution somewhere on the order of 500 to 1,000 acres of city land, residential, commercial, that flow into that same channel. And so there is a contribution from city stormwater as well.
So there's a contribution from stormwater. Do we have any of flow? Do we have any sense, or do you have any sense of what the contribution is of nitrates, organophosphates to that channel from those 1,000 or so acres?
I'm afraid I don't have them split up. I'm referring to the TMDL staff report itself, Table A6, which shows a complete nitrate load. I know there's another portion of that same document that shows allocation from each source, but I'm afraid I don't have it in front of me, nor memorized.
Mr. Johnson, I think we're staff is pretty confident that the discharges strictly from urban stormwater are probably already meeting the wastewater allocations. We just need to have them demonstrate that. Typically, stormwater doesn't have nitrogen and orthophosphorus concentrations exceeding these proposed targets.
So in terms of the city's liability, if I understand correctly, then the city would be required to do a remediation or a management plan that I would assume would do some sampling of stormwater discharge to establish that your assumption is correct?
That is correct.
And that would be about the extent of their of what they would need to do to comply with this TMDL, is that correct?
That is correct, unless for some reason they were exceeding the proposed targets, which we just don't think is likely.
Of course, the other thing that they would be required to do to comply with this TMDL is to not develop a treatment project for agricultural runoff using those channels for conveyance.
That is correct. That is something that they are proactively doing that they don't need to do.
I would like to speak to that, though. I am responsible for delivering water to the community. Right now, we have 6 production wells. 2 of them exceed the drinking water standard. In the Santa Maria Valley, there are 2 essential groundwater basins, a shallow one and a deeper one. And we know that our solution to our nitrate problem could be just to dig a deeper well. I'm not the only person who knows that, but if every water user in the Santa Maria Valley dug a deeper well, we haven't solved the problem. And so I, who am looking for a long-term sustainable drinking water supply, am willing to work with the stakeholders in the valley to find real solutions so that we can follow the advice of SBX 2-1 report to the legislature that talks about pumping and fertilizing. Only by removing the nitrate from the ground are we going to find a long-term sustainable solution. The city believes in this to the point where we have funded that feasibility study and are willing to work with the other stakeholders within the valley in order to see it a reality. This is not a problem that happened overnight. It will take decades to solve. What we are looking for are real solutions.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Claire Weinman and then Steve Shimmick.
Good afternoon, Chair Young and members of the board. My name is Claire Weinman, and I'm the president of the Growers Shipper Association of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. I'm here today to convey the association's major outstanding concerns that were not adequately addressed in staff responses to our written comments. We maintain that there are no reasonably foreseeable methods of compliance. Many of the agronomic methods presented in the CEQA substitute document are already being implemented where feasible, and will not likely reduce nutrient levels to meet TMDL targets. This is especially true for biostimulatory targets, given the complexities of the nitrogen cycle and nutrient availability. The vegetative methods have not been well documented in terms of appropriate design, which is subject to site conditions, volume, and residence time of flow as they pertain to actual nutrient load reductions. Staff indicates that means of compliance might be used to advance towards TMDL targets. This is not the same as achieving TMDL targets. With regard to food safety mandates, staff is correct that they are not currently regulations per se, but a farmer cannot sell their produce to commercial buyers without meeting them. They may well soon become regulations under the FDA's pending Food Safety Modernization Act, which will formalize many of the practices currently being implemented under the Leafy Greens Marketing Agreement. In any case, the food safety mitigation measures suggested are not in compliance with buyer mandates. To reiterate, this association strongly opposes basin plan amendments with targets that have no reasonably foreseeable methods of compliance. As Mr. Johnston observed, the association also has outstanding concerns regarding the adoption of numeric biostimulatory targets rather than maintaining qualitative targets. Staff recognizes the uncertainties inherent due to the variety of physical and ecological conditions in the watershed and proposes to review the targets 10 years after the TMDL effective date. 10 years could mean two ag order renewals with escalating requirements based on imprecise TMDL targets. As such, the association recommends maintaining the qualitative nature of the biostimulatory targets for the basin plan rather than adopting quantitative targets that are difficult to assess and unlikely to represent the true biostimulatory nature of surface water. I would like to comment on two specifics in the resolution language on page 11. Under implementation, letter E, the draft language continues to misrepresent the requirement for irrigation and nutrient management plans under the order, which is only required for Tier 3 farms with high nitrate loading risk, as Angela explained earlier. Additionally, under determination of compliance, we strongly encourage modifying the language to read, "Water Board staff will assess compliance with load allocations using a combination of the following."
I'll let you wrap up.
One sentence. In summary, we urge the board to address these major outstanding concerns, and we do appreciate staff's collaboration in the development of the TMDL. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Shimmick, last speaker.
Steve Shimmick, I want to make it clear that I'm representing the Otter Project in this particular issue and not Monterey Coast Keeper, because that would be Gordon Hensley's kind of area, all right? So sea otters are dying of microcystin poisoning. They are. Dozens have been found dead. They die because of liver failure. Microcystin hits have happened in the Santa Maria watershed. So microcystin blooms are a problem. Sea otters are dying, a listed endangered species. Microcystin and many biological organisms respond to concentration, not to load. In other words, you know, if you want to solve the microcystin problem, which is what you're looking at, one of the issues that you're looking at, you have to talk about concentration. In other words, they don't sit around and say, oh, okay, so much load has happened, I'm going to bloom. They respond to the concentration that they are experiencing, and it's going to take a reduction in that concentration to solve that problem. Secondly, if, you know, the 303D list is not on the agenda here, and taking things off the 303D list is simply not on the agenda here. This is an inappropriate forum for that. As far as conveyance, using a waterway as conveyance, let's go back to microcystin and that issue. If you have a microcystin bloom in a waterway that's being used as a conveyance, and then you remove the nitrates later on, the microcystin, which is the poison, is still going to be in that water. You need to deal with this issue. You have lots of the lower Santa Maria and the lower Salinas are priority areas for you. You need to move ahead. I encourage adoption of this TMDL, and I encourage, so that I don't have to talk again, adoption of the Basin Plan Amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schimmick. That concludes a public comment on this, so it's now for board discussion. Dr. Wolf?
And question for staff. There's been a lot of discussion on concentration versus load. So what is the economic difference between using concentration versus load? Economic, both associated with the city as an impact and also agriculture. And then the second part of my question is, if we use load instead of concentration, what would be the potential unintended consequences from an environmental standpoint?
Thank you for your question, Dr. Wolf. As far as the economic differences, off the top of my head, they're really not going to be, I'm going to interrupt myself and say that the implementation of the TMDL will be the same, whether it is expressed in terms of concentration or expressed in terms of mass load. As we have said, as staff has said, and some of the stakeholders have said, we have existing water quality objectives, particularly for drinking water standard and ionized ammonia. So we still have to get to those standards. We have to get to those standards. And the implementation that is necessary to do that is going to be the same, whether it's expressed as concentration or whether it's expressed as load. And also, I think it's important to note that, as I said earlier, the environment responds to concentration, not load. The environment doesn't know. The insects, you know, macroinvertebrates don't know, the fish don't know, and so on, and algae doesn't know how much load you put into the system, but it knows concentration. And that is what drives the environmental response in these systems. And I say that because even if we were to develop a mass load TMDL, at the end of the day, we're going to have to figure out what that concentration is and figure out, are we meeting that MUN standard? Are we meeting the unionized ammonia standard? And are the resulting concentrations from that expressed load resulting in the concentrations that are going to hold algae at bay? So from the standpoint of implementation, I see very little difference. However, from the standpoint of then showing compliance from a mass load-based TMDL, I think it would actually cost more money for implementing parties, because the flow data that is necessary to not only develop a TMDL that is based on mass load, but then also to show compliance with those waste allocations is far more than is currently required in the permits and the ag order. As you can imagine, in systems where we have water that is, particularly in the summertime, effluent dominated or dominated from discharges, from agricultural discharges and stormwater, that that water, the water that is in those channels, is highly variable. It's not like the East Coast where we can count on a certain volume of water in a creek in a certain month of the year. It's highly variable. Consequently, because of that variability, if you understand statistics, we're going to need a lot more data in order to do that. And the Regional Board obviously is not in the business of collecting flow data for implementing parties. That would be upon them to do that. So I won't go on any more about that, but I think you get the idea. We would have to have a lot more flow data in order to do that. So economic standpoint, implementation would be the same, but then showing compliance with those waste allocations would be more expensive. From unintended consequences standpoint, I think that the unintended consequences, again, would include a revision of the agricultural order and the ripple effect that would have, because the data that we would need in order to develop and then implement a mass load TMDL will be far in excess of what the current order requires. That would be one of the consequences. And the ripple effect of changing the order as it stands right now, I think, is something that I don't think is worth it, because, again, at the end of the day, implementing parties are going to have to implement measures in order to achieve existing water quality standards.
Thank you.
Mr. Johnston?
I admit to being intrigued by what the city raised as far as the issue of attempting to do large-scale treatment of essentially somebody else's effluent of agricultural wastewater, because I assume they have an economic interest as a city. Agriculture is the economic driver of the region, and because they have an interest in being able to continue to find drinkable groundwater. And the problem of using those channels as a conveyance to do that. I'm intrigued by the prospect. I understand that there's some history of the city raising that these channels should not be considered subject to beneficial use requirements, and the regional and state board repeatedly and pretty consistently disagreeing. But still, the concept of using those channels as conveyances to do some actual treatment, you know, to deal with the bigger scale problem intrigues me. What can you speak a little bit to that? What are the problems? I mean, the advantages seem pretty obvious. The question is, what are the problems with it? Is it even doable? It was raised whether delisting is even something we can be talking about. Hmm. It's something that's above my pay grade at this point.
Thank you for that question. I really applaud the city for the proactive efforts that they do, and I feel like we have a very good relationship. The bioreactor project that Ms. Sweeney is referring to is something that we fully support, and I think that these channels, not only these agricultural channels or these flood control channels, but perhaps similar channels that we have in the region could be used for treatment. And so one of the things that we have done to try to help them along with the problem that these channels are listed. They are listed. They're listed on the 303D list. So consequently, we have to develop TMDLs for these channels. However, what we do have, and in order to, just for your own edification, recall that in order to delist those channels, it requires more than this regional board's approval to do so. It requires State Board Approval, Office of Administrative Law, and finally US EPA. The Clean Water Act has Section 303D, so it's a Clean Water Act issue. So it is not within this board's power to basically delist those channels from, or take those channels off the 303D list. And that's what we're talking about. We are talking about delisting those channels from the 303D list. That's a federal decision. So that's the first thing. So how do we then provide the incentive that the city needs in order to do like this project, this bioreactor project? One of the things that we do is we make it very clear to them that any discharges, in this case agricultural discharges, that are occurring outside their permit area and upstream from them, they are not required to address those problems. That basically these channels for those discharges are simply conveying that nitrogen and phosphorus that's coming through the city that they are not responsible for. That's one thing. And then what I think some of the concerns are about this is that if we develop TMDLs for these channels, which we have to because now they're listed, if we develop TMDLs for these channels, the fear is that the monitoring to show progress towards meeting those TMDLs will occur in the channel. And so what we've done is we've made very specific language in the Basin Plan Amendment language that says that the monitoring will be downstream of these treatment systems. In other words, at the confluence of the Santa Maria River. So they have basically the lineal length of all these channels to use for these treatment systems, and we are not asking them to collect data in the channels themselves, but rather at the end of the treatment train at the confluence of the Santa Maria River, which is a perfectly logical approach not only to help them progress towards treatment systems like this, but then also to gauge what the impact is on the Santa Maria River from these channels. Because remember, the Santa Maria River is also listed, so we can treat these channels then as a source to the Santa Maria River. So what I'm saying is that the point that we are recommending that they propose for where they monitor their contribution to the Santa Maria River is not in the channels themselves, in the middle of the channel, upstream of those treatment systems, but at the very end of that treatment train at the confluence of the Santa Maria River.
Well, just to follow up, two things. First of all, if I were the city of Santa Maria, the last place I'd want to monitor is at the confluence with the Santa Maria River, because then I'm measuring not only the city's stormwater contribution to that water, but I'm measuring all of the other contribution, which is the year-round flow from 5,000 acres of agriculture in the case of that one channel and whatever it is that contributes to the other two, which I have no control over as a city. So I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the city can meet their requirement by simply picking a couple of representative points of where their stormwater enters the channels and doing some kind of monthly sampling, even though a lot of months the sample would show zero flow. And that they could then meet their requirement by monitoring there as opposed to at the confluence with the Santa Maria River. Is that correct?
That is correct. And then we had the conversation a little bit earlier that is what I would propose that they would include in their wasteland allocation attainment plan.
So assuming that they're doing that,
yeah.
Then, does anything in this TMDL and in what, as a result of the TMDL, we would be requiring in the city's MS4 permit prevent the city from going forward with using either the lower portions or the entire length or whatever of the Bradley or either of the other two channels to do treatment of somebody else's effluent that's going through their channels?
Not to my knowledge.
So to your understanding then, if the city's doing their monitoring where at some representative set of points, doesn't have to be everywhere, mm-hmm. where stormwater is coming into those and presumably just periodic, not mm-hmm. real time, where stormwater is coming into that channel system.
Through their outfalls.
Through mm-hmm. their outfalls. Mm-hmm. That nothing in either this TMDL or in its sort of quasi-automatic impact or impact on the next, on the MS4, would prevent the city from moving forward with, let's say, end of the channel wood chip treatment systems for the somebody else's effluent being conveyed in the channel that we're making clear they're not responsible for.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. I just have a question for Jessica. Mr. Haggerty mentioned Health and Safety Code Section 57004 and then CEQA.
Yes.
Is there any requirement that we implement those two statutory schemes in developing this TMDL?
Yes. There are requirements for the TMDL to be peer-reviewed.
Okay.
There should be a letter that's in your staff supplement that I wrote that basically said that the peer review requirements were satisfied by using the peer review of the Salinas TMDL. They relied on the same information. As far as CEQA, there is a requirement for the TMDL to have what's called a substitute environmental document.
Right.
You don't have to do the full EIR, or negative declaration, but you do have to do some CEQA analysis.
Well, Mr. Haggerty was asking for the full CEQA analysis.
No, he was saying that the CEQA analysis that we did just wasn't complete enough.
Mm.
However, I would argue that it is.
Okay. Is it acceptable to use the Salinas peer review?
Yes.
For this one?
Yes.
Why?
It's relying on the same assumptions. So we're not analyzing anything different.
The way the health and safety code works, it looks at the scientific underpinnings of the TMDL, and it's common practice around the state. Other regions do it. If you are dealing with the same pollutant in similar circumstances and you're relying on the same scientific principles, you can reuse that a previous scientific peer review. You don't have to keep repeating the same peer review.
Okay. All right.
I have one more question.
Okay. Last one.
Last one. Not to be disrespectful to staff, but I realize that your opinions expressed in front of the board don't necessarily have the force of law, nor do yours. But just to double check it, what I was asking about whether the order as the TMDL as written would impede the city from meeting their obligations by simply doing some representative amount of outfall monitoring to establish that that they're not exceeding those concentrations, and whether that in that situation, anything in this TMDL or in the changes that were required to the MS4 would prevent the city from moving forward with an end of ditch wood chip treatment plan like they've talked about. Do you concur with what we just heard from staff on that?
Yes, I would.
Thank you.
Okay. Are we ready to discuss what to do? We have a recommendation from staff.
Yes, we recommend. Did you say, do we have a recommendation from staff?
Yeah, on the TMDL, to adopt the TMDL.
We have a recommendation to adopt.
No changes proposed after what you've heard?
Correct.
Correct, okay. No changes from the board proposed? I just need some motions, and then we can vote on it.
Let me start by saying I think Mr. Johnston's questions helped to clarify what I also understood, that the city is not being held responsible for effluent that enters from upstream sources. And that, to me, would be the big concern as far as the city is responsible for cleanup. So I hope that is clarified and that the concerns that you've raised are legitimate, in that you need assurance that you're not going to be required. The fact that you have other goals or mandates, if you will, for sustaining and protecting the drinking water supply is also an important goal that we want to support and work with you on. But I don't think that this TMDL presents any burdens or any penalties or even any time frame in which you can achieve your own, the city's goals. And I think, you know, this particular TMDL, it, to my understanding from Mr. Rose and Mr. Harlan, that it is very unlikely that you're going to have to do anything other than monitor to determine if there are nitrates and organophosphates entering from stormwater. So, you know, it seems like a minimal component of the issues, the contaminants that you're working on in terms of stormwater. And that's our concern right now, that this and this TMDL is going to be implemented through your stormwater program. So, and I think, thank you, Chris, for clarifying for us. I think we all need to remember that the environment responds to concentration, and wildlife and aquatic wildlife are, just the ecosystem in general, is degraded in terms of concentration. That's how it's expressed, and that's how we measure it and understand it. So on that, with that understanding, I would move to approve this TMDL and Basin Plan Amendment.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Thank you, staff.
Thank you very much.